Welcome back to Broadcast Focus. My name's Russell Trafford-Jones. And what we do here is quite simple. We have short, informal chats with people throughout the industry about innovative ideas, career origin stories, tech stuff, and often things that are important for a healthy industry, such as making sure there are plenty of new people coming into the industry, that we're a diverse workforce, and that we treat each other equitably, with a nod to last week's Mental Health Awareness Week in the UK, that we work sustainably for us individually, as well as for the planet. So I'm just back from 3 days at MPTS, someone has to set it up, a major UK trade show where every conversation was like a mini episode of Broadcast Focus. And to help me unpack what we saw and talked about is innovation co-lead for the IBC Accelerators Media Innovation Programme. Her consultancy specialises in innovation and emerging technologies and XR production. Many of you have guessed who it is. It's Mukhi Kulhan. Welcome.
Hey, Russell Trafford-Jones, or RTJ, and hello, Broadcast Focus. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. Thank you very much. So do you want to give us a quick intro into to what you what drives you, what gets you interested in the industry, what do you do today?
Well, thanks, Russell. And it was great to see you too at MPTS. You know, we're used to being on all these video calls, so that's another great thing about being in real life together. My core focus of my business is divided up into what I call three verticals. First one around research and development within broadcasting, emerging, kind of the cusp of broadcasting engineering and new emerging media technologies, kind of in creative and content production, game engine, XR, VR, kind of like the really good interactive pop culture. My background's MTV and BBC, Red Bull, all kinds of, you know, content related to pop culture, music, sport. Second vertical is around the actual coalface part of it. By trade, in my spine, I'm a broadcast journalist and a producer. So I'm executive producer for a lot of the projects that, you know, are primarily focused around extended realities, virtual reality, augmented reality, and really what drives that good supply chain between, you know, what is coming up there and in our broadcasting and technology worlds. And then I'm one of those super nerds that I look at something new and I completely build up a workflow in it and imagine a fan taking part in it and developing it. So when I have that opportunity to actually put the exec producer hat on, then crew up where we need to and try to make the best fan experience that goes to market. And then the third vertical of what I do is what I call knowledge sharing. So you'll see me a lot on stage and having the privilege to be chatting to great people and doing podcasts like with great folks like yourself. And I do a lot of mentoring and involved with things like Female Factor, the Bold community, obviously Rise, and lots and lots of Soho Media Club. So again, bringing to life those kind of people, human-centric stories in our technology world. So that's where it's cool to kind of combine all those together. None of that happened overnight, keep in mind. So it's a career of kind of finding those opportunities and just going for it. I'm not a person that sits around and waits for something to happen. So it's kind of seeing that and jumping right in without the net. Who needs the net?
Nets are optional.
Nets optional. Hashtag that.
So what's the work with the IBC that you do?
So IBC is the International Broadcasting Convention. Just in case, for those of you watching, have never heard of it before, it is one of the largest media production shows in the world. It's coming up to, I think, nearly 60 years, and its core roots and foundations are based off technical papers, broadcast and technology papers. That, again, that mix of broadcast and academia. It's grown so much so that it's become a regular conference in Amsterdam, and it does bring together media and entertainment production communities from new kit and hardware to the new software workflows. And so I've got the privilege to help be the innovation co-lead on the IBC Accelerators Media Innovation Program. Say that 10 times fast, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you got a strong drink in front of you. So what I do is the innovation co-lead alongside Mark Smith, and now we've got a Karen Boyd helping us out, and many of you will know. The innovation, the accelerators was created about 5-6 years ago to be a framework for the industry, again, for the industry, by the industry, staying true to the roots of IBC. But the accelerators was set up as a framework to really bring the entire ecosystem of our media and entertainment broadcast tech family together. The accelerators are set out by traditionally by champions, who are defined as the broadcasters, large tech companies, academia, studios, with a lot of studios in LA, like Paramount, to also some nonprofits in our industry, like Movie Labs, and also some of the owners of IBC get involved, such as the IET, the Institute of Engineering Technology, and SMPTE. They set out the challenges that are really things that they're living through, like the really recognized pain points in the industry of the challenges that they're trying to solve, the very common problems, which is why the round table start to come together. And so when we developed the program, we knew that this was going to be a really, really important topic. So the pipeline kind of works where the calls go out around September, the applications come in, and then around 12 projects are pitched at Kickstart Day at the IET, 8 projects go through. So when the announcement goes out for the projects going through, we start to onboard. Look at these problems together as mini consortiums. So I think we might be able to kind of talk a little bit about some of the projects over the last couple of years. You've seen, again, when it kind of really started to kick in 2020, became and then pandemic hit, became a little bit of an oasis, almost like a really great safe space for the industry to come meet at. You know, there's weekly calls working towards proof of concepts that we then showcase at IBC. But when lockdown, the pandemic hit, and so many productions got canceled, it was able to be, you know, still serve as a great, you know, meeting place every week, where it's part think tank, part mad scientist labs, part a therapy session, which some senior executives said to me on stage recently. And that it's learning by doing. So it is about those tangible results that all the proof of concept materials, champions and the participants are able to take away. So it's about open knowledge, open sharing too. And so some of the projects this year, I think you'll see very, very, very topical projects that are coming to light this year. Focusing around sustainability. You'll see they're from the EcoFlow project, IP networks, and, you know, the crisis in IP, finding that needle in the haystack. One of our returning champions, returning participants year on year, but we also have a really amazing array of new broadcasters and new young companies coming into play, and also new academia coming into play too. So you could see there from that slide that range of kind of connectivity, low latency, extended realities, control rooms, the evolution of the control rooms, what happens with HTML graphics, explorations around voice, AI. We're doing something brand new this year, forming an AI media production labs. We've got three subgroup of case studies, mini groups forming under that have formed under that around generative AI and production and audience validation. So utilizing an AI persona for non-bias and inclusion and diversity, and another AI group on predictive generative AI. And the last one I want to mention, I know I've just said a lot of words in a short space of time, but for anyone that knows me and can speak Mookie speak, can follow along. And the last one I want to mention is something that's what we're calling a bit of our flagship project, which, Russell, you've been involved in the last 2 years with TechX and through SMPTE and IET, is the Connect and Produce Anywhere. It's on phase two, and it was become so successful over the last few years of evolution from 5G remote production to 5G in the middle of nowhere, which won the Project of the Year award, into the connect and produce everywhere, really exploring that you know, that combination of edge and the connectivity of what multi-vendor approaches is needed to genuinely connect and produce from anywhere in the world, especially in harder to reach places and harder to connect to places. We decided to pull that out this year into an incubator, mm-hmm. aptly titled the Connect and Produce Everywhere Phase 2, which if you were at MPTS, we're able to do a live demo, which I can talk to you about in just a second. So that's the accelerators, grows year on year. And we invite you to come to IBC and see us in Hall 3, where you can see our science fair style mad scientist lab of all the results and all the champions. We'll have over 180 companies involved this year. And it just gives me I get excited every single year because it is a different show every year. They're different projects, but they're so relative. They're so topical. And a lot of these groups stay together, form commercial relationships, go to market with exciting projects. Some stay together as buddies. The Slack channels stay live and we meet for drinks. But as you can see here in this visual is the accelerator zone. And that's where you can see all 8 projects, and the incubator will stand out, will be a part of this year. We're able to see the proof of concept results, see the tangible results, look at the different workflows, look at the infrastructure and the architecture that's been developed, see some of the real tangible results, and talk to the champions and talk to the participants. So it's a really, it's a fun party. It's a fun party for 6 months, and it doesn't stop there. So.
I mean, the reason it is relevant, as you say, is that it's based upon the idea of broadcasters coming together and saying, this is what we need to do. And exactly. You know, if you've got 3 broadcasters that need to do it, you've got 6, you've got 9, you've got potentially 100, depending on what the application is. So it's no surprise that it gels with what's happening at IBC. And I think part of the point of our conversation today is that it's pretty much what's happening at MPTS as well. So
exactly, we were talking about that, weren't we? Yeah.
So you've been moderating a whole bunch of sessions at MPTS. So you're a busy person. So if we just take a look through those, I mean, I think that gives us a flavour for what people are interested in, what people are talking about. And so you started off with the State of the Nation. If I just bring that up here.
State of the Nation, broadcast technology. Yeah. I think when we were talking about this podcast, Russell, we wanted to, you know, give a nice little review of MPTS because we love it so much. And I love this conference, and I've loved speaking at it. And it is sister from another mister type of conference to IBC, a little bit of a, that progression of what you might see at CES or NAB or IBC. But what MPTS does so well is to really bring a very diverse crowd and bringing great speakers together, great topics that are super relevant. And I call it the kind of your favorite cousin that you want to invite to the barbecue kind of conference. But what we were saying out there, that we were noticing on the show floor, so many of those exhibitors are part of the IBC accelerators. Look at the topics, and so many of these talks are being explored in the accelerators. So we found really great synergies. And so it was my pleasure to be on stage so many times with so many great speakers, and some of them part of the accelerators and some of them were not, and then even mentioning some of the proof of concepts being explored too. And also for folks, sorry, one more thing is that I think it's cool that we're doing this review of MPTS. It's the kind of mini shout out to it, to also give folks a little flavor of what you might have missed if you were there, but also a good flavor for anyone that couldn't make it. A special shout out to my neighbor, Scott, who's a brilliant DOP and you couldn't make it. So shout out to you, Scott, neighbor. And anyone else that couldn't make it here too. So, right, so do you want to start with this one, Russ?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's a good lineup as far as I can see. We have IMG, Gravity Media. I mean, SailGP is an interesting one. I mean, that's a really tricky sport. Obviously, it's sailing. And if you've got to follow the boats. You've got to have technology on the boats, technology around the boats. RF doesn't always work well with water. And it's always far away. So you're always pushing technology there. And we know that the folks at ITV and other public broadcasters are always doing that. So what was the feeling on this? A state of the nation is on the technology side is, no, it's a big title. What kind of things did you dig into?
I love doing this session. I love opening the show with this topic because this is what the goal was, to really be top line and really set the scene for the rest of the conference. And I know there were other parallel state of the nations that were doing the same thing, but what we wanted to do here is focus on really good key areas of broadcasting technology that we're going to be deeper diving into throughout the rest of the 2 days at MBTS. I love this lineup so much. I loved all the lineups that I had, but I think this lineup was really so well curated by Charlotte and Lisa and the team, giving a really great flavor of, the amazing things that IMG were doing, especially, with football and all the broadcasts they do with BT Sport. And obviously, Gravity Media being closely associated with that and all the great stuff that Roisin works on, and the kind of really great innovation that they're exploring as part of that chain. And obviously, Clive Santamaria, close personal showbiz friend, chief architect at ITV, part of many accelerators over the years, but what he brings to the flavor is that broadcaster's perspective and that really experienced viewpoint where these things plug into play. Now, SailGP, a really great addition, because you wouldn't expect that to be there at MPTS, but here they were, because they're talking about how they broadcast. And what was exciting about having Warren on this session, SailGP, they're able to kind of manage their own. It's not a separate franchise. We have like 10,000 stakeholders and other franchises and ownerships and, ways to try to influence how the innovation can be put into play. They could just make a decision right then and there. And obviously they are on the ocean dealing with nature. You don't know which way the sails are going to go. No pun intended. I just made that up. Sorry, everybody. But, they're able to, everything is, it's cloud. You're relying on drones. You rely, it's so many tricky components. But they know that they still have to make a fan experience and what that fan experience will look like. So we're able to talk about the broadcasting technology, but what was music to my ears as someone exploring XR for 15 years of my career, at least minimum, was we were able to weave in the use of virtual reality and augmented reality, real-time data being implemented into a fan experience as the event was happening live. And that was part of a natural discussion of a state of the nation broadcasting technology. So how cool is that, in my opinion?
That's really good. And I think, it's interesting because, I think we know collectively that Americans, certainly North American sports, are filled with statistics. And we've seen a gradual rise in, things that we can track. But I think what's interesting, perhaps from the creative point of view at the same time, is now that we have the technology to show more data, it's not just a list of 10%, 20%, all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You're actually seeing it on the screen in a way which really puts it right next to whatever it's talking about. There's many ways of doing it. And I think you end up having different shows with different characteristics just because of the way they choose to show their, the information and which types of stats they bring out. So
it's pretty cool to have that. But I think, sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's what's interesting about that is, the whole chain cares about that data and also the accuracy of that data, from the producers to the broadcaster, the owner, all the way through to the fan, looking at real-time stats of the athlete, of the speed of the boats, of et cetera, et cetera. But I just want to also put into parallel, those are similar workflows that are happening at ITV. And also, through the work that IMG do with the football as well, and Gravity Media. So it was a nice, we had these nice spot topics that were really relevant to all of them as well, too. So that was a great way to start the day.
That sounds really good. The next one sounds quite worrying, really. Was this a tutorial on how to back up your data or?
No. Yeah. It's called get a rugged Lacy that doesn't fail you when your computer does not have the correct software on it. And you need to upgrade your Mac. Sorry, inside joke. Need to get to Mojave, folks, on my Mac. So where's my content? So if you're looking at this description, and maybe if you don't mind clicking it for one second, get the description. So they're looking about this. This session was actually curated by the fantastic Barney at Alluvio. And he couldn't make it. So I worked quite closely with Barney and to make sure that this had the really, really the right perspective and the right point of view. So you see kind of like where the content, it literally, we wanted to deliver this session exactly, do what it says on the tin. Ask this question, where is your content? Where is it going? How do you know where it ends up? How did it get to where it is currently? You see these words like the influence of blockchain and Web3, but we wanted to just to like flavor that, like a little bit of salt and pepper flavoring on that, and then really kind of come into play on that exploration of the use, from the production of the content, and then go under the hood. So you can see from our speakers, here we've got like the great range of, looking at things from a brand perspective and looking at things from, you're zooming in. There we go.
But you know,
Simon and Jules, exactly. So, attention seekers, super successful agency dealing with lots of big brands. They are content production. They are geniuses at marketing. And, what Jules was bringing to the table were kind of like, where do those commercial opportunities lie, or how can you help safeguard from your business point of view? But what's great is that we still got to say, keep the kind of technology part of this and go under the hood, and really, really, really get under the hood here with the green, sorry. And start to talk about like the real technical elements of it and metadata and how that relates to physical data. So we kind of like a good combination of creative fest and nerd fest there too. So
is this about, given that we've got to use third parties for most productions, making sure your data is protected and you understand, or you prevent them perhaps from passing on to a third party, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Is that part of the conversation?
It was. And then it's a little bit of like, starting to implement new tools and technology into that. Of course, the two vowels that's on everybody's head, which we're kind of getting burned down on, the AI kind of comes into play. I'm sorry. I just wanted to give a shout out to Tracy Mitchell, who's the founder of Greenfish.io. I didn't have my glasses on, so I couldn't read her name properly. Sorry, everybody. But Tracy was amazing. And it was great to throw to her to, get the touch on the kind of the end part of that content. But it was a little bit of that protection, safeguarding, but also knowing at the moment content can be published and manipulated. Cue disinformation, another IBC accelerator, which has 15 broadcasters on it. But there's, again, these are topics that we're all trying to explore together. So I look forward to, integrating what we talked about and learned on this, another really great panel. So thank you to the team at Alluvio for helping put that together.
So emerging technologies was notable because it was not part of the main show floor on MPTS. So yes. what was upstairs? Tell us, Mookie.
So upstairs, MPTS had a special, so it was at the Olympia in London. And they have a balcony section upstairs. And there was a separate kind of media or technology conference that was curated and run by Sympty UK, with the invitation, the first day being kind of an invitation only for some Sympty members and a very C-suite level peers in the industry. And John Ellerton at BT's, who's the Sympty UK chair. And Polly Hickling from Evident curated this, the 2 days that Sympty were running so well. And it was really exciting to see that room absolutely packed out for every session and for most of the sessions. Sorry, I didn't get to attend all of them. This one was packed out because they gave a really great feel of lots of different areas of where emerging technology is being discussed, put into play, again, hands-on, you know, the great kind of variation of what folks like Addy has been doing, and through his role at DTG, he's ex-Meta, so he's able to kind of, you know, bring that wider, being part of that wider ecosystem from product to content to that consumer experience. You know, and Andy Rayner at a peer, talking about the post-production and the pre-production elements, again, very coalface and hands-on, which is great because we're all makers essentially. Joss Capper is from Cinesite London, and she was focusing on the visual effects side of things. And then thrown in again, nice rounded out was Rory Daniels, who is program manager of Emerging Tech for Tech UK, was able to kind of give that, you know, where the stats come into play and where funding is going from a government point of view, from that a kind of research and development point of view. And I did give a good overview of the accelerators because it's completely relevant to not only the areas of emerging technologies that folks are talking about, but we're not talking about it, we're doing. And we're exploring where an emerging technology could be, you know, what point does that become democratized? At what point does that, how long does that take for, you know, maybe new companies to find their feet and settle in to more established companies trying to pivot and, you know, adjust to new ways of working that they might not be used to and finding those budgets. So it was a really great, well-rounded session. And we thank Polly and all at SMD for putting together a really great day. And then the next day, SMD hosted a demonstration of our IBC Accelerator Connect and Produce Anywhere Part 2, which was really fantastic and a great panel with the team.
It was really interesting, you know, to see the difference at the on the SMT conference, particularly on day two. It was there was a lot of detail, a lot of it was almost like a primer for a lot of technologies. And then on the first day with this emerging technologies idea, I think the whole point of talking about how you'll use a technology is really important, because if you don't change the way you work, then you can miss kind of a lot of benefits from technology.
Yes.
So next day, generative AI. This sounds like it's on the creative side, but when we've listened to IT did a webinar with Rich Walsh the other month, and although he was describing the creation of it, there's obviously a lot of tech and new technology going into the production elements and how to interface with AI and change it so that you know in subtle ways. So I think even as part, I guess what I'm trying to expose is we want to think about how to create fresh stuff with AI, whether it helps or replaces, all this kind of stuff. What can we do with it? But we're having to also retool the whole of that workflow in order to integrate and tell AI what to do in ways that we've never had to do in the past, which I think could be a good kind of conversion point for the creative and the technological side.
Exactly. So this session is actually a encore session, if we'll call it that. From MBTS's AI. So this was part of the AI forum. Sorry. So while SMPTE was upstairs, the rest of the conference was happening, and all the different stages and audio and virtual production and the show floor. They had a separate AI forum in a room that, again, like the SMPTE conference, looked like an old elk lodge with the windows couldn't even open, so it was a little bit warm. But this specific session was an encore of the same panel, minus me. I didn't moderate it last time, but this session actually happened at the AI forum in November. And it's the same three speakers that you see here. So Aline van der Velden from Particle 6, Guy Gadney, founder and CEO of Charisma, and Alex I'm not going to pronounce his last name because I don't want to mess it up, Alex, but he said it's okay. That was permission. Who's MD of network social platforms for Little Dot Studios content creation. So this is a lot more creative, and I'm glad that they did, this was included in it. So ultimately, what happened in the November session, you know, it just became a lot of great discussion and a lot of debate from the audience. And it became one of the most watched sessions back on their VOD, and folks were still talking about it. So it was a very, very popular session. So when I was talking to Charlotte about this, they wanted to bring this back. Again, I had the privilege of moderating this, an amazingly packed out room. I think there was about 150 people in this room, and the questions were coming in from Slido, right, left, and center. And, you know, these three folks are able to bring together a perspective of the use cases of AI and what they do. So very kind of like great case studies, tangible kind of things. I keep saying this word tangible, but it's like things that are happening now. So somebody like Guy Gadney, you know, running Charisma, they were building AI before it was popular. They were actually making these, you know, building the code and making the you know, developing the ML themselves way before any of these tools came out. So It's about a pivot of somebody that's been doing it for a long time and you know, building an artificial intelligence model that's genuinely artificially intelligent. And then how do you pivot the way you work, and how does that affect the fans making? Because Charisma AI is, you know, looking at instant storytelling, you know, for your kids and that kind of choose your own adventure type of stuff. And then with production studios like Particle 6 and Little Dot, you know, it is changing away from a traditional workflow. And how they are developing things and how that affects their teams, their budgets, their clients. And so I think where the audience, where that what was interesting for the audience, and I saw this firsthand, is that mix of what do we do now? We're too scared to use it because if you're a freelancer, could jeopardize what you do for a living, or you know, they don't want it to jeopardize, or they want to feel like a fraud or a fake or something. Mm-hmm. Or how do I take a risk with my company when we're still trying to get these, you know, RFPs? We're still trying to win these RFPs. At what point do you kind of tip this over? And Alex had a great analogy on stage about it's kind of like that train that's going and you're standing on the platform. And you're trying to wait to figure out when to get on and actually, you know, try to go with it. So we had a great discussion there around, you know, how, what they're making, showed a couple of visuals of that, you know, how it's used in like an application to visualization, previs, when and when not to use it in an actual workflow that could be published. And that brings up the topic of what I always say, and you'll hear me say this 1,000 times, especially during the accelerators, we have that liberty of, at IBC accelerators, we have that liberty of having no wrong answers. The whole program is set up to explore and throw that spaghetti against the wall. But the debate comes in of quality over the quantity, you know? So Aline, you know, they started a YouTube channel, a kid's YouTube channel with just animation, and everything's AI. Everything's done by that generative and putting it in, which I think is a great way to explore that, because with kids, you could probably, you know, have a little bit of runway. They're not going to judge, oh, what's that pixel?
No, I don't care.
Right. But if you're going to be dealing with a bigger client and a bigger brand or an agency, you know, like even a Saatchi, BBH, Hogarth, like at what point will more commercial elements accept quality of the output? At what point will these tools give you a higher quality output so it doesn't look like an AI? This is where we're on the brink. We're on the brink of the cusp of tipping point in our worlds.
Yes, it's interesting. It's an interesting one, that, really, because it reminds me of two things that Rich Welsh has said in the past. And one is that it makes sense in many people's minds to change the shape of people's lips so that they're saying the dubbed words instead of the original language words. But he said, at this point in time, no one is going to let you near those pixels. They are what the director intended. They are what the actor said, after all. And it's just not on the table. You can do that. Mm-hmm. Who knows whether that will change in time? You know, it only takes perhaps a few films to do it, and then I don't know. It depends how popular it is.
Well,
He also indicated that the training model for manipulating for manipulating films and keeping it within the context and looking at with the right aesthetic of the film, isn't there, and there's not enough data to train
it
with.
I agree, 1,000,000%.
Interesting challenges.
And I actually get asked to chair this kind of similar topic a lot, and I did a really great session at South by Southwest with that mix of applications like Volgrams and creative production teams that just say you cannot replace the human face. You cannot replace the human. It will never ever happen. No. And everyone's like, yeah, woo. Because it was, South by is a good creative vibe. It's not, it's a very different type of tech chat. But I really believe that's a session that we can genuinely have every year. I hate that you used to have that question. What's going to happen in 5 years? I'm like, what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes? Because even Guy had to give a presentation. Guy from Charisma had to give a presentation. I had to change it the night before because of all the new things happening with Google and AP. I have to quickly change it. We have to stay on our toes constantly. So in one way, it's kind of annoying where just as you start to get a groove on and feel comfortable with using some of these tools and feeling confident that it's part of you and part of your creativity, because that's where I think it's a little bit tricky with a general audience. The three I had on stage are brilliant and they know how to nail it. But an average person in the room was still really scared and confused on what to do. Again, which is why these conferences exist. You're curious, you want to learn, come and chat to us and come and learn and observe.
Exactly, and talk to your peers and other
I was happy, I was happy though, the majority of the audience didn't use AI. They still don't know. They don't know. I beg your pardon. MPTS audience, I think people are so curious on how to do it right.
Yeah. And it reminds me of something else that came up. After the demo that we did of the Kepa accelerator, one of the people who came to look at the demo was from South America. And he was very surprised at how much the broadcasters working together, because he's over there. We're just enemies of each other. We won't even, everything is secret. We won't talk to anybody. But, that's one of the things about going to MPTS, really, actually. You're talking to everybody. And, there's certain things that people don't talk about. That's fine. But most of the time, you can just go to your peer in another organization and say, this is a nightmare, isn't it? And they'll say, yeah, this is what we do about it.
Yeah. And it's great that things like accelerators and other, initiatives from CoStar and the European Horizon 2020, that's 2023, and Immerse UK and Innovate UK. And, there's lots of opportunities to get stuck in and, try to explore and do get stuck into some research and get stuck into R&D as well.
Yeah.
Yes. In person is the best way too, but it's good that we can be discussing remotely.
So your last session was with ITN, which is pretty cool.
Yay.
I've spoken to John before, but I hadn't heard from Jenny. And so it was really nice to hear the challenges of both the technology and the production from a broadcaster. So what did you take away from that session?
Yeah, this was great because it's, each session is different and unique, obviously. But what I loved about this one is that it was focused on one broadcaster, one case study of their journey on creating, these award-winning studios that had to really set some high bars of expectations with their stakeholders internally. Really looking at that entire spectrum of, with the new tech you bring in, how will that work with everything else? What's the output? What's the, still maintaining, thinking about maintaining that level of, non-biased, respected integrity when you're talking about news, to, you know, working, like it says here in the scripture, working with, like, you know, the blockbuster type of events, like the Coronation, World Outdoor Athletics Championships, and really making sure, like, you know, those millions that are, you know, enjoying it become multi-millions, and where those kind of hiccups come into play, you know, the kind of how they were choosing some of the kit inside those studios, how long did it take to sign off, and how would they know what works together, and then where they go from there. So I think for ITN, I've seen these studios. I got to pop by there about a year ago on Grayson Road, and got to know John really well. But like you said, it was great to have Jenny there to have that perspective and really bring, you know, under the hood, above the hood, and kind of give a great, well-rounded example of how a broadcaster is being progressive with their architectures internally, externally, and what they need to be doing, and some of their thought processes as well too. So hopefully that inspired the crowd.
Well, you know, it's one of the benefits of IBC and PTS, where you can get together, or rather you can get contact with the creative side if that's not part of your role already, and vice versa. So to hear from both sides is really good. And I think, obviously, for ITN, that red line stays the same as we just talked about. You don't alter this in one place. News isn't going to benefit from that, at least from their news part of the business. So their use of AI, if at all, would be totally different from the other the other ones you're talking about, but they've got that same urgency to create more content or to cut the content differently, deliver to different platforms. And so that's part of the scale and the technology challenge, but it's also an editing challenge, because obviously the more times you have to cut a program, the more editing decisions there are, and the more you know, the shorter it gets, the more difficult, presumably, to get that balance and to get the information across quickly.
Yeah, and you mentioned, again, AI, you know, it has been around for 80 years. The difference now, it's just the models are programmed a bit quicker. I think what an audience, anyone watching this will understand this already, but in case there's any new folks curious about the broadcasting industry and production and emerging tech, is that there's two, you know, many types of AI. And really what we're working with is, you know, machine learning, really, deep down. The things that are generative AI do something very different to what's the way an implementation of an AI-based MML workflow would be, you know, where those large language models are going, you know, into an actual broadcast infrastructure versus using generative to pop ideas off of or make a storyboard, things like that too. So they're very different tools. And again, it's like utilizing those right ones for you. But Jenny and John and their entire team at ITN were able to consider and put a lot of thought into it, because they're thinking about the output. You know, something that I did, it, you know, that does get brought up is the consumer and the fan, and, you know, what is do the new ways of working and producing and being, utilizing these emerging technologies make a difference on what a fan thinks? Hopefully not, because they're just enjoying it, right? And they're not going to go, what's this thing for, right? Right. It should be, it doesn't, that's not that they're a fan's job or a customer's job or a viewer, a listener, needs to just enjoy it. And that entertainment is there to forget about everything for a while. And that's where we're doing our jobs right, is making sure that end result, the end user, is completely over the moon and happy. So they are talking about it more. I wanted to mention one quick thing that you were referencing of Rich, from Rich, about like the movement of the lips, just rewinding slightly. And this was an accelerator last year, exploring that synthetic human and the build of that synthetic human. And we had a whole project, Synthetic Humans for Entertainment and Accessibility. And one thing that the industry is still really, really, really trying very hard to work on is that use of AI and accessibility, non-bias, non-prejudiced, inclusion, equality, another accelerator. But the point is, when you're thinking about someone who is hearing impaired, they are relying on lip reading. And right now, a hearing impaired person is not having the best time watching an avatar speak, especially in different languages. And we were able to research and do a lot of work on that firsthand last year's accelerator. And I think that's something important that we just don't talk about enough. I think that's a whole dedicated panel that we really need to get into people's minds. How accessible is the content that you're creating? You know, will your visually impaired friend enjoy it? Will your mobility impaired friend enjoy it? Is that gender equality? Where is that factored in? Is that at the very beginning of your kind of ideation? It should be, ladies and gentlemen, rather than at the end going, oh my gosh, the lips are just moving like that. How will my deaf friend or how my hearing impaired friends understand that? So I hope that's a part of the industry that is also coming together more often to make sure that there's perhaps new standards into play and new rules to kind of tick off.
Yeah. It's a difficult one to make a rule about
because it's part of quality control.
Yeah, the relatively controversial rule about captioning in the US being mandatory to the extent of actually having non-financial punishments is relatively easy to test. There or not, are they basically what people said? Does it convey the same meaning? It would be, it's much harder to bring in something which says, well, couldn't really lip read enough. How do you test that? Difficult times, but all of the technology that we've seen coming in